There's two parts to the Sydney Hobart race. It's always, the public always follow the line honours winner first across the line. And traditionally it's the biggest boats in the fleet that are vying for that position. But ultimately there's only three or four boats that will get across the line first. But the other championship that they're racing for is the handicap honours, which traditionally can be anything from a 34 footer or 35 footer all the way through to the biggest boats in the fleet, the maxis, which are 100 feet long. So more often though, the 50 footers are about the size of boats that traditionally do very well on handicap. The maxi boats are now around about the 100 feet. Back when I did my last Sydney Hobart in 1995, the maxis were more like 85 feet. The 100 footers nowadays are capable of doing 300-400 miles a day, no problem at all, and speeds up around 30-35 knots, which is pretty darn fast. When things go wrong at that speed, they go wrong really quick. So those boats traditionally have around 20-22 crew and are just beasts. The sails on board are heavy. Headsails would be weighing around 80, 90, 100 kilos, compared to, say, the 50 footers, where the headsails weigh more like about 17, 18, 20 kilos, around that sort of weight. The maxis are always doing that. Well, I'll go back. The maxis are always vying for the record. The record for the Sydney Hobart race at the moment stands for 1 day, 15 hours. And to do that, for the 630 miles, you're doing upwards of 20 knots on average. The last Sydney Hobart race that I did in 95 was on a boat called Congeer. But prior to that, that boat was Alan Bond's maxi boat that he built for the 1990 Sydney Hobart. And on that board that year, we got line honours. And line honours is one of the great things in ocean racing. You want to get in one of the classics. To get line honours in one of the classics like the Sydney Hobart is a huge honour. So for Alan Bond, after winning the America's Cup, that was another thing he wanted to tick in the box in sailing. And that year we were on this 85 footer boat, weighed 35 tonnes, and we had a crew of 28 people on board. Mark Richards was a young fella back in those days, and he went on to become the skipper of Wild Oats, and that was his first Sydney Hobart race and his first line honours on the Maxi Drumbeat in 1990. For the handicap honours for this next coming up Sydney Hobart, the ones to watch around that 50-52 foot range, and the one that I think is the favourite in there is a yacht called Ichiban. Ichiban was brand new last year, won the Sydney Hobart race, and has won quite a lot of other regattas since then. And it's owned by a banker, Matt Allen, and you'd have to say they'd be the favourite to win again this year. The harbour on Boxing Day for the start of the Sydney Hobart is chaos. And to be out and amongst it and to get into a prime position like True North will be is a golden opportunity. It's a once in a lifetime opportunity to get out on the water watching the Sydney Hobart firsthand down there amongst it. There's upwards of 300,000 people that line the shore to get the best vantage spot, but True North will be in a position to get an even better vantage spot. So being on board for the start of the Sydney Hobart race on board True North is a once in a lifetime opportunity to see that classic race in the perfect prime spot. My role on board the True North for this year's Sydney Hobart will to keep our onboard guests informed about what's actually happening. Take them through the before the race scenes, what the crews are going through, what preparation they're going through, what they're doing in the lead up to the start, and then we'll talk through the best position they'd be on the starting line for the start and who's actually going to get out of the harbour first. Getting out of the harbour first is a huge psychological boost, and it's a race in itself, and it's really what everyone comes down to watch, the people lining the shore and the people out on the boats, because that's the only part of the race that they can actually physically see. So to talk through the tactics about where you'd go on the harbour and where you'd position your boat and who's got the best speed, I'll talk through with our onboard guests about what's happening minute by minute all the way through to the exit of the harbour. One of the great things about the Sydney Hobart is the lead into it, and the boats are all kept around in Rushcutters Bays, except for a few of the other boats. The maxi boat Wild Oats, for example, is kept around at its own dock, and a few others are as well. But the Cruising Yacht Club of Australia is the host yacht club for the event, and Rushcutters Bay is where all the action is. So I'll be taking all of our guests into Rushcutters Bay, and we'll be looking at the preparation leading into the boats, leaving the dock firsthand, and I'll talk through some of the things the crews are going through, what preparations they're doing in that hours leading into the start of the Sydney Hobart race. The one thing I'm really looking forward to on True North is meeting lots of new people. The one thing about the guests that I've met on True North is they're all successful people. They come from successful backgrounds of making plenty of money, and that gives them an opportunity to have that once-in-a-lifetime trip on True North, and some people back for several trips. But the one thing I really enjoy about it is meeting, hearing their stories, hearing how they've been successful, and seeing what they've done in life, and just meeting new people. I'm really looking forward to that. Back in 1984, all of the crew of Australia 2 were awarded the Order of Australia Medal for services to sailing. Obviously, winning the award was a fantastic achievement, and all of us were really chuffed to be able to be recognised for the services that we were able to do for both the country and the sport of sailing. Over the years, I've been involved with working with youth, and through that program I've had everyone from at-risk youth right through to aspiring junior athletes in the sport of sailing, and I've been able to mentor and help a lot of them achieve their goals and also get people back on track. They're a little bit off the track in terms of the at-risk people, and by doing that, it's a fantastic way of actually putting back into both the young people and also the sport of sailing to try and further their careers in both the sport and advance them in everyday life. Back in 1983, I was given a great opportunity to be part of the team. I was selected to be part of the team on Australia 2. We arrived in Newport in May 1983, and we started our first races in late June. We campaigned all the way through, beating the other 11 challengers for the right to race against the top American boat for the 23rd America's Cup. That top American boat was a boat called Liberty, sailed by Dennis Connor, who was already a past winner of the America's Cup many times before, and up until that point no other challenger had ever won the America's Cup, so it was the longest winning streak in sporting history. So to be part of the crew on board Australia 2 was an awesome achievement itself, but to be part of the team that actually won the 23rd America's Cup, beating Liberty and breaking the longest winning streak in sporting history, was awesome. Being the port trimmer on Australia 2 meant that my role was to try and make the boat go as fast as it possibly could on all points of sail. So I worked very closely with the helmsman, John Bertram, and the main sheet trimmer, Colin Beeshall, and our role was to make it go as quick as we could, and so you'd adjust the sails constantly, working with the other team members on board, either the grinders or the mast men or whatever, to be able to get the maximum speed out of the boat for whatever direction John Bertram was pointing it. John Bertram was an awesome leader, and as a skipper he was in a different league, and working with him was fantastic. He always tried to get the best out of all the crew, and he was very supportive all the way through the process, and he really helped gel the whole team from a champion group of people, a lot of champion sailors amongst it, and champion rowers. We had rowers for grinders, and all coming together as one team meant that we had to gel, and John did a fantastic job of bringing everyone together. Each day we would start our day at 6 a.m. and at 6 a.m. we would do an hour of calisthenics just to get ourselves warmed up, rush back, have a quick breakfast, down to the dock by 8:30, load all the sails on board and out on the water to do either racing in the morning or racing in the morning and in the afternoon. So it was a pretty full on day. And then afterwards you'd unload all the sails again, get them off to the sail loft, and you'd turned back at the house at probably around about 6 p.m. exhausted, throw down some food, maybe have time to have a bit of a chat and a debrief, talk about what's going to happen the next day, and then into bed and through the routine again. Over that 5 months we were in Newport, we had one day off. So it was pretty full on. And, you know, at the end of the day, if you're doing well, which we were, then having days off really wasn't a factor. The keel on Australia too was very different. Ben Lexon, being the genius that he was, came up with this very unique design. And having that very unique design, we worked out very early on that actually we don't want other people to know what's down there. So when we got to Newport, we made a big effort to try and keep it hidden. And what we didn't realise early on was that was doing the head in of all of our competitors. And the psychological effect of that was one of our great strengths. We didn't realise it until the campaign got further on. So once we realised it was doing their head in, we played it like a violin. And Ben Lexon one day actually got some sketches that he drew up, which didn't look at all like a keel, and put it on a photocopier in Newport and said to the guy, "Do you mind if I do a couple of copies of this design I've got here?" And he purposely left the copy on the photocopier and then walked away, came rushing back in 10 minutes later and said, "Oh, I just need to get something. I might have left it here." And meanwhile, the photocopy was red hot. It'd be going overtime for the time that he'd been gone. The next day, that photocopy was all over town. The last race of the 1983 America's Cup was just the race of the century. It was billed as the race of the century. So we went into that race 3-all, and the winds were quite light. The day before that race, Dennis Connor had taken his boat up to the boatyard and stripped 2,000 kilograms out of the boat. The boat that we raced on that final day was a totally different boat to the boat that we'd been racing the previous days. And the boat was an absolute rocket in that light air. And we, one stage, we were 2 minutes behind them coming up to the top mark for the last time before we did that last run downwind. And we were just struggling to get anywhere near them. And we went off to the left side of the course and found a little bit more wind and halved the distance. So we ended up going around the top mark around about 45 seconds behind. And I can remember going around the mark and looking at them as the spinnaker set, saying, "You know what, it's not that far away. You know, I think we've got half a chance of catching them on this downwind leg." And I can remember looking maybe 5 minutes later, and we'd actually closed quite considerably on that distance. And it was soon after that that Dennis jibed away and sailed back towards the middle of the course, where we continued on starboard tack back further across to the left side of the course when you're looking upwind. And it was across in that area we found a little bit more wind. By the time we came back to meet them, two-thirds of the way down the leg, we were actually in front. So we were pretty happy then, and we knew that we had to cover them like a tea cloth on a dirty dish, because if they got out and got a bit of clear air, they would have been gone, because the boat was that much quicker than us upwind in the light air. As soon as the finish cannon went off, after we closed, went across the finishing line, being the port trimmer, I was trimming the headsail right up into that final cannon. And as soon as that gun went off, I took all the turns of the rope off the winch, threw my hands in the air and said, "That's it, I'm done. I've finished my job. We're done." And sail's just flapping in the breeze then, and everyone's going, "Well, what do we do now? It's better pull the sail down. We're done now." The day after we won, 2 days after we won the America's Cup, we were presented with the trophy by the Commodore of the New York Yacht Club at Marble House in Newport, which was one of the Vanderbilt's old houses there. And I call it old house, it was actually a mansion. And then the following day, Ronald Reagan had invited the crew down to the White House, to the Rose Garden, to have a reception with the crew from Dennis Connor's boat. Unfortunately, Warren Jones had a commitment where he had said that we had to do some filming to meet a TV commitment, because we'd got some money that had come in the door. So John Bertram, Warren Jones, and a number of the other crew members went down to the White House, but not all the crew. So I was one of the ones that had to take Australia 2 out for another sail to do some filming commitments, so I missed out on meeting Ronald Reagan. But he did give me an autographed photo of the whole team, well, the rest of the team that was down at the White House that day.
That must have been a bit gutting.
Was gutting. Bastards.
Maybe I shouldn't have brought that one up.
cut that one. Well, one of the things when we were in Newport, Sir James Hardy had said to us, if you're making the news, don't read the news, it'll only upset you. It's what someone else's opinion of actually what's happening. So when we were in Newport, we were more or less closed off from the rest of the world in terms of what was actually happening out there. We knew what was happening. So we didn't realise back in Australia how big it was. So as soon as we got ashore from winning that last race, I fumbled through my pockets, found a couple of quarters, went across to a phone box, a pay phone, and slipped them in, rang up my mother in Perth, Western Australia, and said, hey mum, guess what? We've won the America's Cup. And she said, I know. I said, who told you? We had no idea how big it was. The Sydney Hobart race is one of the great classic ocean races around the world. There's three classics. There's the Sydney Hobart, the Fastnet race, which is in the UK, and there's the Newport Bermuda race, which goes from Newport, Rhode Island down to Bermuda. All of those classic races are around about the 600 nautical mile race. So Sydney Hobart, 630 nautical miles from Sydney, sailing south down to Hobart, down the coast, across the Bass Strait, and it's regarded as probably the toughest of the three, consistently the toughest. And it's not every year you get slammed, but consistently you've got to be prepared for it. So boats that compete in the Sydney Hobart race are always prepared for the worst, because inevitably, sooner or later, you're going to get slammed. And when I mean slammed, 50, 60, 70 knots of wind is not unheard of. So boats that prepare for it and boats that compete in it are tough men and tough boats, and they've got to be prepared for tough conditions. I've competed in six Sydney Hobart races now, and we're line honours with Drumbeat in 1990, which was Bondi's maxi boat, first over the line. We had half a chance of beating the record during that year, and the record was set in Kealoha in 1975, and the record that year was 2 days, 15 hours. The record now is down to 1 day, 15 hours, so it's come down significantly since then. And the boats now are 100 feet. In those days, when I was doing it, the maximum length was 83 feet, which was the length of Drumbeat at the time. The race is incredibly tough, and in that particular year, we had 50 knots of wind. We actually had the three reefs in the main at one stage, and we're trying to slow the boat down as we're crossing Bass Strait into enormous seas. And the boat was leaping out the back of these 4 or 5 metre waves and just crashing to the bottom of these troughs. And they have this great saying in the ocean racing, to finish first you need to finish. So you need to nurse your boat at different times and slow it down so that you don't break it, so you can actually finish the race and get across the line first, which we had to do in that particular race. Almost every Sydney Hobart, you have times when you think, holy cow, what am I doing here? This is extremely scary. And I can think of a number of times over the six Sydney Hobarts that I've done that have been like that. One particular race I was doing in the early 80s, and we were sailing along in probably 35 knots of wind. It was just coming on dawn. It was just that really misty rain and very hard to see anything, and not much light around, and big seas, 3 to 4 metre seas. And I was steering this particular boat, and we're sailing upwind. And I said to the guy next to me, who was a navigator, I said, looks like whales. And he had a look around, and he had a lot better eyesight than I did. And he probably 30 seconds later said, no sails around here. So he had misheard me, and he thought, looks like sails. And I'd misheard him saying, there's no whales around here. Meanwhile, we got to the top of the next wave, and in the trough there were five whales crossing our line. And I put the helm down as hard as I could to try and miss them, went boof, straight into one of them, hit this whale, and his tail comes flying up next to the side of the boat. Meanwhile, the boat had crash tacked, and all the crew that was sitting up on the windward rail were up to their neck in water, trying to leap to the other side. And at the same time, this whale's fluke is just swinging up next to the boat. Now, I'm just worried we're going to get it slammed into the side and take a few crew out or knock the mast out of the boat. And it was just frightening. The modern Maxi in the Sydney Hobart race now is 100 foot long. They limit the length to 100 foot. They typically sail with around about 18 to 25 crew. Some of them have powered winches so that they rely on the engine and hydraulic power to drive their winches, and some of them don't. They actually rely on coffee grinders and manpower to do that. The guys that sail with the unpowered winches, generally they have a slight advantage with their rating, but they need to carry more crew. They need to have more horsepower. And typically, a good solid grinder that's around 100 odd kilos and pretty fit might put out maybe about 3/4 of a horsepower at maximum power, whereas the powered winches put out a lot more than that. But it's noisy. The engine's running the whole time and it's noisy. The amount of sail area these boats have got are massive. The spinnaker on them is about the same as a normal size suburban block. So getting that sail up and down is a massive achievement, particularly when it's windy. So if things start going wrong on those boats, it goes wrong really quick. And you need all hands on deck, and you need to know what you're doing, and you need to be working like a well-oiled team to be able to manage it. Because if it goes pear-shaped, people can get seriously hurt, fall over the side, and if that happens, you know, the consequences are massive. Drumbeat was at the time, it was the biggest carbon fibre structure ever built. It was 83 foot long, the boat weighed 35 tonnes, and we did the Sydney Hobart race in that year with 28 crew. And again, we didn't have powered winches, all relied on coffee grinders and so forth. And one of our crew members on board was, we had a number of well-known crew members on board, but one of them was a very young guy called Mark Richards. Mark Richards has been the skipper of Wild Oats for the last 15 years and has broken all sorts of records in terms of their performance in the Sydney Hobart. Mark Richards will be one of the skippers on board, Wild Oats again this year, coming up for the Sydney Hobart, and that boat has just been had an awesome achievement in that race. The last Sydney Hobart race I did was in 1995, which was the 50th Sydney Hobart race, and that was on the Drumbeat, which was renamed Congeer and owned by an American owner. The favourites for the Sydney Hobart race this year will generally be in the 52 foot range. So there's boats like Ichiban, Quest, Paul Clitheroe's boat is sort of in there. And that size boat, the reason they do particularly well is because they can sail those boats at 100% all the time. So they typically sail with a crew around about 13, 14, somewhere in that order. And the sails on them are relatively light. So what I mean by relatively light is a headsail weighs around that 17, 18, 20 kilos. And one guy can go up and pick it up. Two can handle it quite easily. Whereas you get to a maxi boat, the 100 footers, their headsails weigh upwards of 80 kilos. And so to move a sail around, you need four, five or six crew just to get the sail up on deck and to manhandle it, get it up the mast and so forth. You've got to slow the boat down. Otherwise, you'll get a meter of water over the bow when they stick the nose under. And that heavy head sail with a meter of water going the opposite direction of what the boat is will just wash the thing down the deck. Whereas a 15, 18, 20 kilo sail with one or two guys pulling it forward with half a metre of water going over the deck, they've got half a chance of controlling the sail. So because of that, those boats are working at 100% efficiency all the time. So that's why that's the size of boat that you've got to watch for the handicap on us, the Tattersall's Cup which is the handicap honours for the Sydney Hobart race. If I had a chance to skipper a boat in this year's Sydney Hobart, put me on Ichiban. It's just on 12 months old. It was new around about this time last year, and the owner of the boat, a guy called Matt Allen, has spared no expense on getting that boat well prepared. He's got a top-notch crew, and again, he won the Sydney Hobart last year, and he would have to go into this year's race